Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Erica Meyer. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today, Erica.
I am delighted to be here with you all.
Erica, can you start out by telling our listeners a little bit how you got involved in vegan and animal issues?
Yeah, this is such a great question. I love hearing stories about how people get engaged in what they're working on now. And for me, you know, I think like most kids, I really loved animals. And I grew up with this idea that animals, like once I made this connection, like animals are, you know, these amazing individuals and personalities. And once I made the connection between, you know, a dog or a cat with the food on my plate, I was probably about 8 or 9. And I felt really weird that all of a sudden I was like, I'm eating animals who I love. And it wasn't really something that my family felt that strongly supportive of. And my part of my family, my dad's side of the family, actually came from a meatpacking business that my dad ended up inheriting. So, you know, I ate a lot of meat growing up, but probably even more meat than most kids because this was in our family. And so I just kind of pushed that thought aside for a while. And then I think it was early high school, I became much more interested in environmental interests and activism. I discovered this world of environmental activism, and I had been given a book by someone that was like 101 ways to help the planet. And it included little, you know, little tidbits here and there for kids and younger people to engage in. And it had all these little factoids throughout the book about how meat production is really harmful to the planet. And there are people who don't eat meat as a way to protect the planet. And that's when I discovered the word vegetarian. And I thought, oh, that's a thing. Like, people do this. And I want to be one of those people because I want to protect the environment. And I always thought it was kind of weird that we eat animals. And now I know there are people who feel that way too. And so in, I think it was my freshman year of high school, I just turned 15 and I had become a vegetarian. And then several of my friends became vegetarian, and they still are today. And then for me, a few years later, I really started learning about factory farms and what happens, like where meat, milk, and eggs actually come from, and the horrors that we inflict upon these animals. And it's all happening behind these closed doors. So, of course, we don't know about it. And once I learned that and saw some of the video footage and some of the images, it was in college. And I immediately became vegan and then decided I needed to learn more about this. And somebody said, do you know what PETA is? And I was like, no, what's PETA? And I discovered PETA and I realized like people do this for a living. Like people are out there as animal advocates for a living. And that was my career path since that moment of discovery. And I've never looked back.
Wow.
And I'm sure it's been very fulfilling, too. I mean, I can't think of a better way to spend your life than being compassionate and caring and helping creatures that can't help themselves.
Yeah, and just giving people some of that information that is so denied in our culture and society, and giving people the opportunity to make more informed choices. Because more people know about what's happening, the more likely they want to steer away from that. But if you don't have that information, you don't know what you're supporting.
I think because of the internet, a lot more people know what's happening today than did like 10 years ago.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I think social media has changed the way we can talk about so many social justice issues, being able to get the information out there right away, to share video footage and opinions and thoughts and ideas without having to hope that, you know, a major media outlet might cover it, which is still, it's happening more and more, but just being able to, you know, as individual activists, as smaller grassroots groups, you can reach way more people now.
What's really interesting too is like how things can go viral on Instagram and Twitter and all of these different social media. So one image can really reach literally thousands of people in just a few minutes.
Yes, I think that it has really shifted our ability generally as a society to communicate and to point out injustices and to fight for change.
Another big way that we used to do outreach was person to person, live out in reality. And now the whole thing has shifted to being mostly online. Do you think that that's become a drawback? Have we sort of crippled our outreach by not being able to do the person-to-person things we used to do?
Yeah, you know, I thought about this, especially more recently with COVID. The animal protection movement, as well as other grassroots movements, have relied a lot on that in-person activity, a lot of leafleting or community events and other sort of, you know, hands-on outreach activities. And because of the rise of social media and the ability to reach mass audiences in a virtual world, I think that some of that sort of grassroots community activism has gone a little bit to the wayside or less focus in our movement. And now with COVID, that's, you know, everything is now, people are even going into offices, everything is remote, and the interactions between individuals is at great limitations because of this pandemic. And I think that one thing that is going to, at least the way I feel about it and have seen, is some of the shift towards going back to our communities. Like, we've, I think, gone so global in a sense that we've lost sight of where we are and who we are, and giving ourselves time to rethink who we are individually, where we are in our communities, and how communities organizing together can have important and lasting impacts that reverberate on a global scale, but it starts very locally. So the idea of like community gardens, for example, which then provides people with nourishing, healthy, plant-based foods and cooking demonstrations. Like, I think that some of that concept is being revitalized in this moment of sort of this global shutdown.
I used to do cooking classes as one of my major methods of outreach, and I'm sort of frustrated that I can't do cooking classes anymore. Doing them online isn't the same because the audience can't taste the food.
Yes. But and I think there is that opportunity to reach more people online. So you have like the benefit of reaching more people, but the drawback of not having that personal connection, and trying to develop a balance between that, I think, is important. And maybe that innovation will come through now that we're struggling with, you know, how do we engage with people in the middle of a pandemic?
And Erica, how does your organization, how are you guys rethinking about how you're doing your outreach?
Well, unfortunately, we had to cancel many of our in-person activities, such as our annual DC Veg Fest celebration, which would bring in about 20 to 25,000 people. Wow. It would have been happening right about now, actually. And so, you know, that has been, you know, it was an easy decision to make in the sense that we knew it wasn't possible to take place in the middle of this pandemic, and for the safety of everyone involved, it of course had to be canceled, and we canceled it pretty early on in the year. But, you know, it also, I think, as an organization focused on exposing the abuse of farm animals and empowering people to choose vegan foods, this pandemic has really given us an opportunity to elevate the voices of the animals inside these factory farms and slaughterhouses, and to also build bridges with other causes, other social justice issues that are really also concerned about the way in which animal agribusiness is operating, including what's happening to workers who are being forced to keep these slaughter lines moving quickly. And the USDA is now trying to get even, you know, faster speeds in these places where the pandemic is spreading rapidly. And so it's given us an ability, I think, to elevate that conversation and to build stronger bridges. And in terms of, you know, our outreach and activities, I mean, we're all remote now, we're all online. And I think that we're trying to figure out new ways right now, now knowing, you know, where we are in this pandemic and how, you know, this uncertainty of how long it might be, to reengage with activists in their communities to figure out where they're comfortable engaging in the community. So I think it does come back a little bit to that community level.
And can you tell us a little bit about why you guys rebranded your name?
Because previously
you were known as Compassion Over Killing, and now you are Animal Outlook?
Yeah, so we are actually celebrating 25 years of Compassion this year. We were founded in 1995 as a high school club in D.C. And as part of our 25th anniversary celebration, and it's, you know, been a conversation we've had for several years, and the strategy behind it and coming up with, you know, all the new concepts and rebranding. It was time for us to sort of grow up. We had grown wiser as an organization with better strategies and elevating our impact for animals. And, you know, our new name served us well for a time, and it also had its own challenges. And we decided that this was an opportunity, you know, turning 25, to shift our, and not shift, I guess, reimagine our vision for the future and to really take a step forward into creating a better vision for where we want to go and providing a new platform for us to really elevate our voices and elevate the voices and the stories of farm animals.
Yeah, and I sort of like the idea that the word killing is on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it, you know, again, the name served us well for the time being, but its time has come and gone. And yeah, there were definitely some challenges with our original name. And, you know, we just felt it was time for us to take that step forward. And, you know, we all agreed. There was no hesitation internally at all about changing our name. Everyone agreed this was a step we needed to take.
Well, speaking of outreach, Erica, you know, we've had the good fortune of having you come to El Paso to give some talks to the Veg Society of El Paso. And could you tell us, maybe for those that haven't been able to spend time with you and hear your great presentations, can you tell us a little bit about what Animal Outlook does in general?
Yeah, and I remember my visits to El Paso well, and it's been quite a while, and it seems like it'll probably be even longer now before I have a chance to come back. But I appreciate the invitations you guys have extended to me. And you guys are doing really great work, so it was exciting to be part of that. Yeah, I mean, as an organization, we focus on farm animal abuse, exposing what really happens inside factory farms. So we do a lot of undercover investigations, and a lot of that work also connects to our legal advocacy, where we focus on delivering justice, whether it is challenging the status quo of animal agribusiness or challenging the marketing of a lot of the products people see in stores. There are a lot of claims, like humane claims, that are misleading to consumers. And we also focus a lot on sort of innovating and revolutionizing the food system. So we work with corporations, persuading them to use fewer animal ingredients, as well as adding vegan options to their menu. For example, we helped Dunkin' Donuts push them forward on adding almond milk to their menu a few years ago. And we have worked with Boca Foods, for example. They are 100% egg-free company now as a result of us working with them. And we're hoping to push them further forward to remove dairy from all of their products.
Just one quick question on that. How do you convince a company to do something like that? I'm just kind of curious because, I mean, that's a major shift. I mean, they're producing tons of food that's serving vegetarians, and then how do you get them to make the shift to go egg-free, for instance?
Yeah, so, you know, some of it is providing information about the growth in the vegan market. And a growing number of people are looking for that. And by not providing it, you're missing out on an opportunity. But really, the biggest impact that we've had with major food companies, these food giants, has been engaging with consumers to reach out to them directly and asking. We're encouraging people to ask the companies directly for that change. And that's where a lot of their interest comes, is hearing from the masses, hearing from people who are either vegan, who want to go vegan, who would buy more vegan options if they were available. And so it's really the change that these companies are making is coming from everyday people just reaching out and asking, either by calling, emailing, posting on social media, asking them for this. So that's, again, that's where the engagement comes from as well, is engaging with our volunteers and other activists to empower everyone to call these companies and ask for that change.
So emails and petitions are more powerful than we used to think.
They are greatly powerful if these companies know that they are potentially missing out on a consumer base.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you all are working with, I think one of your latest initiatives is trying to get IHOP to change.
Yes.
Some of their policies. What are y'all hoping to do with them?
We would like them to offer a vegan pancake, and they have expressed some inclination towards that, and we are hoping that they will take that next step. But again, that step is really coming because that potential step is going to come from people asking. They need to know that there's a demand and an interest. for that option.
Right. And it's that one you would think is a fairly easy one to make, you know, and there's also like vegan whipped creams now and or like, you know, a vegan Cool Whip, and there's all the vegan toppings that you easily make the entire probably not the healthiest meal in the world, but a delicious one to make it vegan is super.
Yes, yes. Wouldn't it be great to be able to go to IHOP and order vegan pancakes?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I would go there.
Waffles. Waffles with blueberries.
Hey, well, you know, ask for vegan waffles. I mean, that's the key thing, is to let them know, you know, what people want. And with enough people asking, I think that we're going to see more changes in these food companies.
And this is an easy ask, because you're not, you know, asking someone to go and throw, you know, blood on somebody wearing fur or something like that. You know, it's like, you know, just make more options available so people that want to have a different lifestyle have a choice when they go to a restaurant.
Yeah, it's a win-win. And you know, there is a restaurant industry concept called veto vote. And the idea is that the restaurant industry often uses in developing a menu and making sure there are vegan options is out of a group of, let's say, 5 to 6 people. One of them is likely to be vegan or vegetarian. And that one person is going to be able to sway the entire group on where to go based on if there is a vegan option available. So they have sort of this veto vote concept, like that vegan can vote out a restaurant simply because there's no option. So simply by having more options on your menu, restaurants are recognizing that they can appeal to broader audiences.
Right, right. And I think right now is potentially, I mean, especially a hard time for restaurants. And I've seen some articles about Applebee's and BJ's Brewhouse and these major chains that are facing, you know, bankruptcy. And, you know, now is really a perfect time. Unfortunately, it's a hard time, but it's a perfect time for them to start thinking about how they can make their food more appealing to all audiences in the hopes of staying in business.
Yes, and of course, supporting vegan businesses is essential too, because they provide such important food options for mostly non-vegans. I mean, most vegan restaurants say their business is successful because mostly non-vegans are going in there. And that also just brings up the issue of, you know, the rise of pandemics, which is highly associated with how we're raising and confining farm animals. And so... Yeah. By offering more vegan options, we can also protect not only our personal health, but help protect public health by shifting away from factory farms.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, we're really worried here about in El Paso is I've heard that some of our local vegan eateries have gone under, you know, they haven't been able to withstand all the restrictions imposed by the COVID virus. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody out there listening, try to support your local vegan eateries and those that offer options, and be sure to ask for options when you go there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough time for businesses in general, but we all need to eat, so.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So what's next on the horizon for Animal Outlook, Erica? Is there anything new that you all are hoping to be working on? Or?
Yeah, we have a couple of undercover investigations we're hoping to release soon. So keep an eye out for that, and I'll share some of those details when we have them more publicly accessible to share. And so, you know, a lot of our work is also focusing on the legal advocacy component. We have several lawsuits pending against the U.S. Department of Agriculture that are focusing on the high-speed slaughter issue, the fact that there are, you know, slaughterhouses are already challenged under this pandemic, and they started out as very dangerous places to be to begin with, and now the government is trying to allow these slaughterhouses to run their line speeds, their kill line speeds even faster, which puts animals at obviously higher risks of suffering, it puts workers at risk, and it puts food safety at risk. So we're hoping to have some progress on some of those lawsuits, which a lot of those are also generated around coalitions. So we're hoping to have announcements on that soon. And we also have a law pending against the nation or the world's largest seafood company, Cook Aquaculture. It's a facility we investigated late last year. And it is an aquaculture facility. They raise salmon. So it's a hatchery and grow out, and we filed a lawsuit based on misleading claims on their product packaging. So hopefully we will also have updates on that soon. And of course, our efforts to get IHOP and other places like Starbucks to offer food options that are vegan friendly so that more people can enjoy animal friendly foods.
We've been talking with Erica Meyer, president of Animal Outlook. Erica, we thank you for your time today. And can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about the work of Animal Outlook?
Thanks for having me. And yes, we hope everyone will want to visit animaloutlook.org to learn more and get involved with some of our work.
Thanks so much, Erica.
It's been nice to connect.
Thank you.
Thank you.